Accessing library computer data.
The world doesn't always adhere to logic. And sometimes when you're lost, you're found.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the podcast. If you're new to the show, this is a Penske podcast where we're running through all the Star Trek episodes. And if you're not new to the show, welcome back. We're going to be talking about Star Trek Discovery. Hope you guys are doing well. So it's been 12 years, and finally, Trek is back on the small screen. Star Trek Discovery was created by Brian Fuller and Alex Kurtzman. It is the first Star Trek series since 2005's Enterprise, and it's set a decade before TOS. Gretchen Berg and Aaron Harberts are the showrunners. We're going to be talking about the two opening episodes that came out. I'm joined by Clay. Clay, how are you?
I'm good. I was looking forward to this, and I was pleasantly surprised by it, I think. So
yeah, I think I'll share the same sort of sentiment. We're going to be talking about the Vulcan Hello, and we're going to be talking about Battle at the Binary Stars. So if I guess I'll start this off by just saying that the Vulcan Hello was directed by David Semel. Story goes to Brian Fuller and Alex Kurtzman. Screenplay goes to Akiva Goldsman and Brian Fuller. Coming across the relic in space leaves the Federation First Officer Michael Burnham between captain and crew of the starship Shenzhou. I've been pronouncing that word wrong, Clay. I don't know if you're an expert in Asian pronunciation, but it's Shenzhou, I guess. And
I actually am.
Okay. Battle at the Binary Stars, directed by Adam Kane, written by Nicholas Meyer and Brian Fuller. Face-to-face with Klingon vessels, the Shenzhou prepares for the possibility of war. So we're going to be talking about this first Star Trek show in 12 years to come along, and me and Clay watching both. We're going to play an audio clip, and then we're going to come back, and we're going to talk about Star Trek Discovery.
Commander Burnham.
Hello, Sarek. I'm happy to see you.
So many years, and still you allow emotional considerations to impede your logic.
They inform my logic. I need your help.
I assume the timing of the call was not coincidental. The Quadrant reports a new star in the sky. What have you done out there on the edge of Federation space?
We've encountered the Klingons.
How rare to meet one's own demons in the flesh.
I killed one.
In light of the fact that they killed your parents, some might think that only fair. However, if a death was necessary, I am satisfied it was not yours. I'm most certain you did not call me for emotional solace.
We're facing off. No fire has been exchanged, but they didn't turn on that beacon until Starfleet was on its way to our position. I think there's summoning more of their kind.
An odd proposition, given that their empire has been in disarray for generations. But you are describing something out of the ordinary. Restraint in the face of conflict. When a civilization acts in opposition to its instincts, maybe under the influence of something or someone new. Great unifiers, few and far between, but they do come. Often such leaders will need a profound cause for their followers to rally around.
A war.
Be very careful that your assumptions are not being driven by your past.
This isn't about what happened, Sarek. It's what's happening now. How did the Vulcans achieve diplomatic relations with the Klingons?
That is a solution particular to us. One cannot assume it would work on a ship commanded by humans.
Sarek, please.
I caution you. Be considerate with how you use this information. You cannot save lives that have already been lost.
Tell me, how did you keep the Klingons at bay?
Clay, you can tell it's a modern Star Trek because there are multiple concussions in these episodes, and the characters actually bring them up and say that you are concussed and you need to take a lie down because this is serious brain damage that you're suffering from. Well, yeah, would you think of Star Trek Discovery, the first two episodes? We're just going to talk about them as like one episode because they're pretty much a two-parter. They continue the exact same story, so I think it's a good place to go from there. So we'll just be jumping around between the two of them. But what'd you think of everything overall going forward here?
I really liked it. I I'm not really a purist when it comes to like Star Trek design and stuff. So a lot of the, for lack of a better term, anachronistic technology didn't bother me. I'm sure it probably is going to bother a lot of people. But I didn't have a problem with that kind of stuff. I'm still not 100% on the Klingons. I think that's will remain to be seen how that ends up playing out. But I think I thought they look cool. If not, maybe a little over-designed. But, you know, I was on Twitter very briefly, and I saw Zach Handlin tweeted about this, and I have to echo something that he said, which is, I feel bad for people who didn't get to see the second part of this, because the second part of it, if you only saw the first part, it feels just like any other Star Trek thing that came before it. It's not until you watch the second part that you realize they're kind of taking you in a different direction that they've never really gone before, and that... Like, I was on board, but the last 5 minutes and then the trailer for the rest of the season really, really hooked me into it. I'm on board.
Yeah, I think the big thing about these two episodes is that they're basically a prologue for what seems to be the real story. Like, this is not the story of Discovery, the stuff that we've seen and everything in the trailer to this part. Like, we haven't even seen the Discovery yet in the first two episodes. So we're still waiting to see the title ship of the show. But I think that the thing that I liked about the series and the thing that I disliked are actually this prologue setup that they've given us. I liked it because it was different, and it's no other Star Trek series has set things up this way. And it's also done, it did a pretty good job of sort of flipping expectations. And it's shown you that, you know, the show, for better or worse, is going to have like a Game of Thrones mentality where, like, oh, anyone could possibly die.
I think that remains to be seen. I think go ahead.
Yeah. That might be an unfair sort of description, but I think that they wanted to show right off the bat that it's going to be a different Star Trek show than what we've seen before. And not that anyone going forward is in horrible danger or anything like that. But I think that they wanted to set the show off on a different foot from it. And I think that how effective they managed to do that is kind of the other side of my argument or criticism of the show, because I feel that what they tried to do might not land well enough going forward. I don't know. Like, I don't know if we spent enough time with the characters to this point where you're stuck in this weird space where maybe you spent too much time with them going through two episodes, or maybe you didn't spend enough time. And I guess it'll sort of branch out from how the story takes us going forward. Does that make sense to you? I felt like in the end of the second episode, when characters start being offed and everything, I didn't really feel anything for them because we haven't spent any time with them. So it's like I'm supposed to assume this sort of emotional connection with them that I didn't really get across. And I don't know if it's a weakness of the episodes at this point or if I'm not supposed to care at all going forward.
Yeah, I don't know, because one of the things that I noticed was they didn't really spend any time introducing you to anybody on the ship. And at first, that stood out as an odd choice, because I was like, okay, well, I mean, maybe they're taking a little bit more of a naturalistic approach to how these characters get introduced, even though the very first scene when you were on, it was basically Welcome to Planet Exposition, which was very dry, which was why it was
that's
a
why
big
it's a desert
planet.
Yeah.
once you get to the end, and I kind of realized, like, okay, I personally think for what they're trying to do, they gave you enough, because judging by the trailer for the rest of the season, you're going to get, it's mainly about Michael Bennett. Is their name Bennett?
Burnham.
Yeah. It's clearly she's the main character, and the only other character from the initial ship that we spent any time with was Doug Jones's alien character, who I think he's going to probably be a breakout. I don't know. I hate the term breakout star, but he's going to be a highlight, I think, because he's consistently good. He's really great at heavy makeup characters, so I think he was a really good casting choice for this.
Yeah.
And he seems to come back on the Discovery, so you have that connection. And I think they spent enough time with the main two there, with Michael and then the captain of the ship, to kind of drive home the feeling that she has about the fact that basically she kind of got everybody killed, even though she kind of didn't. It's her fault, but it's kind of not really her fault.
Right. Yeah.
But I think for setting up that character, I think that they spent enough time, because it's not. I mean, it's not really. That's kind of the magic trick, isn't it? That it's not really about how we feel about these. Peripheral characters. It's really about how they influence Michael moving forward.
Right. Yeah. I think that it might have just been the sort of the fact that it was. I was expecting it and not expecting it. We had a patron, Kyle, who actually was predicted that the Shenzhou would be destroyed in the second episode. And that's pretty much what happens. I mean, it makes a lot of sense looking back on it. Like, you can't have two captains in the series and stuff like that. Yeah. Like, you have to get rid of one of them.
I figured, judging from the ship not being named the Discovery, and also from the fact that Michelle Yeoh was only added as a name dropped as a guest star.
Yeah,
I was pretty certain that she was going to die, or she was not going to be on the show after the first two episodes, and they were either going to change ships or the ship was going to get destroyed or something. When they got to the part towards the end about the captain flying the torpedoes onto the ship to self-destruct it, to flying the photon torpedoes, hand-delivering them in a escape pod to the Klingon ship, I was like, okay, all right, that's what I expected to happen. Right. So when they didn't do that and actually did something a little bit more interesting, I was like, oh, that was I wasn't expecting that.
Right.
But I expected captain gets killed, ship gets damaged beyond repair. Then here comes Jason Isaacs. He's the new captain, and you got to deal with number one there, Michael Bernard, or who is still holding the flame for the previous captain, and that kind of bullshit. So the fact that they not only did they kill the captain and they blew up the fucking ship, but then they sent her to jail at the end. And she's like, the setup for the season is that she's like she's not an outlaw, but she's like she's a prisoner who is needed for some as yet undetermined reason.
Yes.
Count me in. Cause so what these two episodes felt like to me, and the two episodes plus the trailer, is if you think about this in terms of TNG, right? The entirety of the season, rest of the season, would be the episode from TNG, and the first two episodes would be the backstory that the person monologues about three quarters of the way through the episode.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
You know, because the episode would be, oh, we're here in the Enterprise, and now we've got this prisoner coming in, another prisoner. Oh, we need the prisoner for something, it turns out. And then, oh, why is she a prisoner? It turns out that was on the ship during this, whatever, the Battle of the Klingon something something, where everybody got killed. And, oh, she's the one that, that compressed down is like a fine mid-level episode of TNG. So I'm kind of excited that they expanded it a little bit and kind of blew it up. Because for me, I can see this show of being very polarizing to Star Trek fans, and probably there may be a lot who don't like it. But for me, who I'm kind of like, I want to see it get weird. I want to see the interesting things that you can get out of the concept. This is right up my alley.
See, I think that the show is surprisingly Star Trek-y to me, in a lot of ways. Like, it's totally different from what I expected in a lot of ways. And it's Star Trek-y in a sense that it has both like the good and bad things about Star Trek in it. It's, a lot of this is because it's a pilot, so it's hard to judge. But I felt like it's charm, like the exposition where scenes, characters are talking to each other in scenes feel charmingly clunky in a Star Trek-y kind of way. Like, there's not a, I feel the show does a lot better when it's doing stuff and it's not when people are talking to each other at this point.
Yeah. Oh, that first scene on the desert was bad. Was real bad.
Yeah, it was real bad. And Michelle Yao, is she a good actress?
Maybe not necessarily in this, because I didn't really buy her 100% of the time as the captain in the way that she was delivering the lines, but who knows?
No, I felt she was miscast, and I don't really understand why she was cast in that role, because I didn't feel she was effective in it. I didn't think she had enough gravitas going into it.
Yeah.
it was a little bit odd. And like you were saying, the desert planet stuff at the beginning felt really sort of clunky off the bat.
When they did that thing where they walked into the shape of the communicator badge or I don't know, the insignia, I did an audible ugh.
Yeah, that's not particularly good. I don't really.
That whole first scene, is there no prime directive at this point? Because weren't they like interfering with a world's ecosystem in order to bring water back? Isn't that like a gross violation of the prime directive?
I mean, Enterprise happened before this, and Enterprise is the series that I'm least familiar with. So I don't know if they're like, viewers or listeners who are more familiar with it might need to explain to me the whole Klingon backstory that we've got going at this point, where we haven't seen them for 100 years when we did see them in Enterprise. So I don't know if something happens in Enterprise where they're not around for it. But yeah, I just felt like they should have the prime directive, I would think. That seems to be, I'm pretty sure that's an Enterprise and stuff like that. But that's sort of the whole point of that is just the flying in the face of everything and sort of setting you off on this different journey where the captain and our first officer are on this desert planet, apparently shooting a well that's blocked or something like that to bring water back to people. And sure. I mean, I think that did you feel it felt like a Star Trek show? To me, it did feel like a Star Trek show in a lot of ways. And it felt like an old Star Trek mixed with a sort of modernization and it actually wasn't as modern as I was expecting it to be in a lot of ways.
Yeah, I would agree. I think it did feel like a Star Trek show. You know, I was honestly wondering at this point if you could even really do it straight-faced between, you know, because it's like, I still find it like all the exposition they were giving about their characters and stuff after Galaxy Quest came out, and that was like, you know, a main thing was Sigourney Weaver just talking about what her character can do and not really do like that. Every time after that, that's all I can think about when you get into these situations where it's like, here's the alien that knows how to do this thing, and he's going to tell you that he knows how to do it.
Right. Yeah.
But I feel like it worked. I feel like it pushed through that, like. And especially with the Orville being around too, which is kind of playing on the same sort of like tongue-in-cheek nature of how quaint this whole setup is at this point.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it worked. I think it felt like a Star Trek show. I didn't think it leaned too heavily on past stuff. Like a lot of the sound effects were classic sound effects, which I liked. But I know a lot of people don't like the, you know, lens flariness of the new stuff. But I thought that they used a similar style but didn't go too overboard with it. And I actually really liked the way it looked. I thought it was kind of cool. I like that look that they kind of got in the Abrams movies of, you know, when you're presented with a star,
right,
the light of the star is really the only thing that's filling up lighting the room that you're in.
Right, yeah.
I really like that look. But yeah, I can see what you mean. It felt like I felt like it was similar, but yeah, it was different in ways. And I don't think it was too off-putting for me anyway. It might be too off-putting for other people. But I thought it was good. I thought that they struck a nice tone as far as that stuff went.
Yeah. I mean, I think that I wrote down the most non-Star Trek-y moment is actually when Burnham nerve pinches Georgiou, the captain, and
I really like that. I thought that was great. Yeah, that
feels like something that's never happened in any of the series before. And so it struck me as a very, like, that's the sort of modern sensibility that they're bringing to it, where this character is sort of willing to do these kinds of things. And I think your effectiveness, like, or how effective you view it, might be a little bit molded by whether or not you think this thing works as like a prologue type episode for stuff. But I also think that the, you know, tying into the older Star Trek-y charm, you know, before the show came out, there was this whole sort of, you know, backlash, as there is backlash against everything, about people saying that this is, you know, it's just like a sort of like progressive politics stuff being shoved down your throat and everything. The show actually, not that they're going to get into this, but the show actually kind of clunkily brings up social stuff in a very Star Trek-y way. Like the Klingons are obsessed with, or are, they distinguish each other based on the color of their skin and they talk about that, and that's an important thing. I wrote down there's some other different things.
There's a big purity aspect, like a bloodline purity coming from the Klingons.
And culture versus race is something that's brought up. Like, what's the difference between a culture and what's the difference between a race? And I thought they were, like, they're a little bit, the statements are a little bit obvious at this point. I don't know if they're going to pursue this type of thing, but it feels very Star Trek-y at the same time. That was an aspect that I thought the show was going to modernize a little bit. It wasn't going to be quite so blunt with that type of stuff. And it's pretty blunt at this point, but that's also with the information that we haven't seen more than two episodes at this point, and they might actually take it in a very interesting direction. But I thought it was just funny that the people who were predicting that was going to happen, while it didn't exactly happen, they did bring up a few points that were kind of in that vein.
And, you know, I mean, Star Trek has always touched on that stuff.
Right.
Like, would you really want a Star Trek that doesn't touch on social issues? That's like the bread and butter of the entire concept.
Yeah.
You know? It's like,
yeah. I thought that I expected them to touch on it, but I thought that, to me, the way that the older shows brought it up felt a little bit ham-fisted. Like, it was a little bit too blunt, and I was surprised by how, in a modern writing setting, they say things like, the Klingons are like, you have the wrong color skin, but I still like you. You're still a good person.
What was interesting to me about it was, I mean, I feel like in the old Star Trek, that scene would have happened between a Klingon and a human.
Yes.
Would have been like, well, the difference between P2P, you know, that kind of bullshit. Whereas here it was like, it's actually happening among their own people, which was interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, like, I agree that maybe it was maybe a little clunky, but it was still interesting. I didn't feel like it took me out of it or anything.
Yeah. Yeah. And I guess it's a good point to hop into the Klingons at this point, because you said you weren't sure about them. I think the Klingons were my favorite aspect of the new episodes. I'm sort of on board with everything that they're doing with them. Mm-hmm. I like the fact that they seem to be splitting the Klingons into different subsets. Makes them, you know, we've always had the problem of, in the previous shows, when the Federation runs into an alien race, right? There's a sense of, like, how can this other race be a threat? They all look the same. It's basically one planet of aliens. How can they possibly withstand thousands of planets? This seems to be a way to fix that, where you have a bunch of Klingon sects that will somehow become united, because that's the way that the future series end up. But this is how this sort of group of people can be a threat to the Federation, because it's basically about unifying various groups of people who don't all look the same and don't seem to be exactly of the same, like, genetic heritage and all that stuff. I thought it's interesting.
Yeah, it is. I think, you know, when I said I wasn't sure about them, I think it was just they were such a shock to the system as far as what Klingons traditionally look like and their way that they're traditionally treated in the show, that it's taken me a little bit longer to get on track with them. I thought the stuff they were doing was interesting. But it was just like, I kept in the back of my head, you know, we had talked about the possibility that the reason that they looked so different was because they were, like, you know, an ancient hibernation ship that got, you know, clearly that didn't happen. But I think in the back of my head, I kept waiting for that reveal, I think.
Okay.
Until they did the conference call there with everybody else. And that was just like, oh, okay, well, I guess this is just how they look. So, like, and you know, they speak a lot slower. The main guy there sounds like they ran him through, like, the Twin Peaks Black Lodge filter, where it sounds like he's talking backwards, kind of.
Yep.
But yeah, I thought they were good. I think they might be a little over-designed. You know, the makeup on the Klingons has always been fairly minimal, even when they had the big heads, you know, because it was like it always stops at, like, the brow piece, and then the rest of it's the actor. And I guess that's a sign of the times or whatnot, but these guys had, like, full makeup on.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's a little stiff, but, you know, I think I liked the baldness. I liked that they were bald. It was kind of interesting. You know, they gave you a lot more to work with the head shape and stuff. The armor was a little bit, I think the armor, again, maybe it's just because I'm so used to what they traditionally look like, but the armor seemed a little bit over-designed, and the ships seemed a little bit over-designed.
Yeah.
But I did like the way that they were presented as, Oh, I love the ship. That was the shield of the ship was just the dead bodies of the warriors. That was fucking awesome. That was great.
that feels very appropriate to me. To me, the big thing about the way that they've changed the Klingons is I really like this storyline where the Klingons are fearful that the Federation homogeny, like the Federation absorbing these races and them all becoming one big thing, is something that the Klingons are opposed to. Like, mm-hmm. It's more of a, they're antagonistic to them because they're fearful of becoming just this melting pot type thing.
Yeah.
And they want to retain their own individuality. And I think that the, like, even the small things of, like, the introduction thing, it's like, and then they always tell us the great lie, like, we come in peace. It's kind of a nice, it's an interesting, it totally makes sense in the Klingon sensibility, and it's something that none of the other series have done, where it's not a conquering type aspect as much as them trying to protect themselves from what they see as a, like, besmirching their individual Klingon-ness.
Yeah, because I feel like what the big problem with the Klingons previously is, like, you get a look into their culture to a fairly extensive degree, but you never really find out, as far as I know, and maybe they do cover this at some point, but I've never really understood why the Klingons had such an adversarial relationship with the Federation, other than the fact that they're kind of, like, standoffish.
Yep.
So to actually kind of get into that, that's a backstory element that I'm into, because the way that they handled it was pretty interesting. It's not just that they are, you know, like you're saying, it's that they have this fear of basically bloodline, you know, tainting kind of thing.
Yep.
It was really interesting, and it works for me with the way that the Klingons usually are presented as an overall kind of race and everything. I thought it was good. It's an element of backstory. It's where in these kind of prequel type things, you can really end up going out of your way to connect the wrong dots. And I didn't feel like this was a bad dot to try and connect.
Yeah, I think so. I think that the interplay between the races is pretty good at this point. I love the scene where Burnham asks Sarek how the Vulcans handled interacting with the Klingons.
The old Vulcan hello.
Which I was spending the entire episode going, like, how are they going to tie this into the Vulcan hello? There's not a lot of time left. Also, sidetrack before we get into that. Episodes feel short, don't they?
Yeah, they kind of did. I mean, I don't know if it was because of the pace, because they move pretty quick. But yeah, they did feel kind of short. I mean, they were, what, 40 minutes? That's the usual.
Yeah, I think it's just like they're 2 minutes shorter than a TNG or DS9 episode, I think. But it did fly by. It felt very quick. But it would have felt
a little longer if they had zapped Burnham into a made up board game.
Right. We would have all dried up and gone to a crawl, I think. So I think that one of my big problems with the prologue-y aspect of this, right, is that I'm fine with Captain Georgiou dying. That makes sense. Mm-hmm. That's story-wise appropriate. I was a little upset that it seems to be at this point that T'Kunva has died.
It looks like he's probably not coming back, which is, he was interesting. Yeah, I liked him.
I felt like he had enough, like, gravitas and sort of, like, charisma in the story was interesting that he was doing. Like, someone has to pick up his mantle, I would assume, but I would have almost preferred sticking with him for a little bit longer. Like, he's done a good job to this point. It would be interesting to see where the character can actually take things.
You know, I was wondering, did Burnham intend to kill him?
Hard to say. I wasn't even sure that she had killed him when she shot him. Like, what they do is kind of confusing. So I guess it's potential that he could come back if we're not clear.
Well, they focus in specifically on the phaser as she picks it up and it's clicked onto red. So I couldn't figure out if it was like they were holding a moment to show that she understood that it was on red and she was firing off a kill shot or if she didn't understand that it was on red and she was firing off a kill shot. Because, you know, the whole point of the mission over there was to not kill him.
Right, yes.
So, so I don't know if she was acting out of, you know, anger at the fact that the captain had been killed. Like, it's, I feel like, it may, you know what, I mean, maybe that's, honestly, that could be something that comes up character-wise later. Because that's an interesting thing to deal with, you know? Because, I mean, arguably the war might not happen if she doesn't kill him. You know?
Right. Yeah, I was just a little bit disappointed that that character seems to be gone at this point. Just because I don't know. I assume we're gonna deal more with the character had a name, that Klingon Cole, who's like the head of the hologram Klingons, who has the biggest problem with him. He's gonna come back, obviously. But yeah, I was a little bit, I was surprised that that was the way that it went with him. And you know, one of my bigger things with the prologue-y aspect is that what'd you think of the battle itself? This, like, it's, you know, it's the title of the episode where we have see a lot of starships, we see a lot of Klingon ships, we see a lot of phaser fire, we see a lot of ships blowing up. What'd you think of the battle in general?
I thought it was pretty good. I thought visually it looked cool. I mean, it's, I think the effects overall in the show look pretty good. I mean, they're obviously not $200 million movie level, but they're definitely the best Star Trek special effects I've ever seen on TV. The ships did all seem very close together, as usual.
They're moving pretty, they're not moving quickly, but they're not moving slowly either. They're not quite Star Wars, but they aren't the old Star Trek, just kind of line up and fire each other. There's a little bit of maneuverability.
Which I think is probably the right choice. You know, I think it got a little bit, if I had to criticize it, I think it got a little bit hard to follow in certain places because it seemed like the Klingons had like mini fighters certain points. And then there's the point where T'Kunva decloaks that giant ship that cuts the other one in half.
Right.
Was that hit the same ship or was that a different ship? I couldn't really get a handle on what that was.
That was the Admiral's ship, the Europa.
Oh, no, I understand that, but I didn't understand what the ship that uncloaked was. Was that his ship?
Yeah, I didn't actually understand that either.
Because it looked different, because it had like a cow catcher on the front of it that was cutting the Europa in half, which I thought as a scene was pretty awesome.
Yeah.
I feel like they took some space battle cues from Rogue One in this movie.
Okay.
Because have you seen Rogue One yet?
I haven't, no.
Oh, maybe I shouldn't talk about it then. Well, you don't care about spoilers.
Nope, go ahead.
In Rogue One, they do the abrupt stop coming out of hyperspace thing a lot. And they use it to great effect in Rogue One because they use it as actually like an offensive maneuver, which is pretty fucking cool.
Sure.
And then there's another part in Rogue One where they actually like, you know, crash one of the ships. You know, it's cool. But it seemed like they probably took a little bit of
inspiration from that.
Which, I mean, or maybe not, because I mean, that movie, I would assume this show has been done for a while.
Yep.
I don't know. Who knows? Who knows how this stuff works?
I mean, I was confused. I also didn't know whether the ship hitting the Europa was the, I think they're calling it the sarcophagus ship, which is T'Kunva's main thing. I assume it was because before it happens, he makes a mention of like the cloak. He mentions something about his cloak abilities.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I couldn't get a good look at what it was.
Right.
Because it seemed like it was something different. I thought it was like just another ship that happened to be there also cloaked.
Yep.
But yeah, I think I felt like the stuff happening in the ships, like on the bridge and stuff, I thought was fine. Like, I didn't think that the character stuff was hard to follow, but the actual action, I think, was a little bit difficult to follow.
I was surprised that for how big it is, you don't see it. It felt very limited that you never leave the bridge of the Discovery at any point. Like, there's not a lot. Mm-hmm. Like, maybe it's because of the primitive and how older it's supposed to be in the timeline of Star Trek, but the ships don't communicate with each other very much. Like, they send the hologram Admiral over and they talk to him for a little bit, but no one ever. I guess they don't have view screens at this point because they never use them. So
they do, because later in the episode, T'Kunva sends his message over and it shows up on the screen.
Yeah, that's right. So it felt, you know, it's supposed to be a big battle, but it felt weird that the other ships, you never get a sense of any of the other captains or anything. Like, you never see any real personal impact of the battle outside of the Discovery stuff, and maybe you don't need to, but at the same time, it made the battle feel unimportant, and also because the way it just kind of wraps up very easily, and it's over at the end.
There's a point towards the end where what's the name of their ship? It's not the Discovery. The quote unquote Discovery.
Oh, the Shenzhou.
Shenzhou is just like dead and floating towards the gravitational pull of the binary stars there.
Yep.
And someone just kind of goes, yeah, all of our ships are down. Well, it's okay. All of their ships are down. Like, it was this weird thing where it was like, this is just the point where, because as they're floating away, I was like, what the fuck are they, like, the battles should still be happening. Why hasn't anybody, like, you know, just shot at them? And, like, they drop in some line about everybody just sort of being done.
Yeah, yep.
And then
Takumba has a similar line. He's like, we have a lot of dead people. They have a lot of dead people. They have more dead people than we do, though. Yeah. So it's okay.
Well, what I actually really liked was Takumba kind of proves Burnham right when after they kind of cease fire and the admiral there's like, hey, let's just stop shooting each other and like have a talk. And he was like, yeah, okay. Yeah, let's do it. So clearly if they had actually done the old Vulcan handshake there and taken the first shot, that probably would have worked.
Yeah. Yep.
So I enjoyed the ambiguousness of whose fault this stuff might be.
I think that the big thing that's got to happen, this show has to kind of at some point bring about a resolution with the Klingons, right? It seems like it might potentially be a first season thing. Maybe it would go on for longer. If the show goes on for longer, they decide to stretch it out. But like, they have to come to a treaty, at least, with the Klingons, right? That's the way that this has to end. And
not right away, though.
Not right away, but it's down the line. Like, the series is going to deal with this Klingon war. It has to come to some resolution where we get on at least decent terms, or TOS terms, where we're at a sort of a Cold War again. I think that what they're going to really try to do is examine this idea that Burnham has about culture versus race, like whether or not the Klingons can be beyond their genetics and whether or not this is like a thing that they can culturally adapt to, or if they're just sort of born that way. And Burnham at this point seems to think that the Klingons are born this way, right? Like, that you can't change a Klingon mind. This is what they're going to do because this is who they are. So I'd imagine that's her arc, right? That seems painfully obvious at this point. Would you agree? Mm.
Yeah, I would say so.
Yeah.
I think it's a little bit of that, but I have a feeling that that's only going to be like tangentially touched on, because I feel like that's probably going to be maybe the larger picture, but I think the day-to-day episode stuff is going to be more personal about her and her actions and how she's taking responsibility for stuff. I think that's probably going to be more what she's into. Kind of the way that, you know, whenever they needed it in the movies, they're like, oh yeah, Kirk hates the Klingons.
Sure, right.
So we're just going to, once we have Klingons, let's have a beat where he talks about how much they suck.
Yeah, right.
But yeah, I would expect them to deal with that at some point. Probably, you know, does sweeps weeks does that yes, exist anymore?
Still, we're in the new internet age.
If so, when they get to Best of Both Worlds Part One, they'll probably deal with it then.
I guess
one of the things I really liked about the first episode. It kind of had the same feel as Best of Both Worlds.
It did, like, yeah.
They put you in a situation that's very difficult to get out of, and they just kind of be like, well, this is it for the day. I liked it. I thought it was overall, I appreciated how ballsy the storytelling decisions were in this.
Which episode did you like better? I heard a lot on Twitter before we got down to doing this. People thought that the second episode was better. And I think I disagree about that in a lot of ways. But what would you think?
I don't think I liked one more than the other as much as I liked pieces of each of them.
Okay.
Kind of. You know, like, I liked the second half of the first episode a lot more.
Yeah.
And I think I liked probably the, probably the back end of the second episode better, too. I think I like the second halves of both of the episodes better than the first half.
First half, I think. Yeah. Yeah, I think I think that I just, the second one to me felt like mostly focusing around the battle. It felt like it wasn't, the first one had more of like the setup, which you obviously need and things like that. The stuff that I'm kind of more interested in than the battle sequence. And actually, I think that you see a lot more of the Klingons in the second episode. And I think seeing too much of them kind of has diminishing returns in a lot of ways. Like they're at the way that they're writing them currently, they seem to be better just having like a few short impact scenes that you can get around. And if they start talking too much, it kind of gets a little bit ridiculous. Maybe I'm just not used to the new portrayal of them, but I don't like seeing too much of them communicating with each other.
And also, like, he was talking about prophecies and there was like a flashback to him getting beaten up as a kid. It's like, what the fuck? why do we need to know any of that stuff?
Well, especially because he dies.
Unless he comes back. Yeah, I was going to say, unless he comes back, I mean, maybe he's not dead.
Yeah, yeah. So.
I have a question for you. Maybe I don't know if you can answer this. Hopefully you can. Because if not, it's my one big kind of issue with the whole setup. Why were the Klingons there?
I don't know why they're there, but I would assume that this is going to be revealed. But also the tying into that sort of the torchbearer thing doesn't make a lot of sense to me. And also the biggest problem I had was I didn't understand the timeline of Burnham kills the torchbearer, right? The first one.
Yeah.
She gets drifted off into space and then we cut to a scene of the Klingons burying the torchbearer. So how did they...
Yeah.
How did they get him back? Were they cloaked the entire time? Or it was just something that kind of stuck in my mind. Is like, is this a flashback to a previous torchbearer that we've never seen before?
Yeah, that whole time aspect there didn't make a ton of sense because like they show you the long form version of her Iron Manning over to the lighthouse thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like she has a clock going ticking down in front of her, and it takes her like she's got like 20 minutes or something to do her whole mission, and it takes her like 10 minutes to get over there.
Yeah, to get over. Yeah.
And then after they kind of cut to commercial, and then they come back, and the Klingons are burying the torchbearer, and then the ship is like we have to get her out of there. She's got 15 seconds left of air, and then they cut to her, and she's clearly just floating aimlessly.
Yes. Yeah.
So how did she float aimlessly back towards the ship fast enough to, you know, like it's one of those things where it's like, I mean, you could really get it. Who cares really? But, you know, it's a little detail that doesn't make a ton of sense.
Yeah, they needed to separate her from the ship, right? So she could run into the torchbearer. I thought that
I also wanted to say, I hope it comes back because otherwise, man, that guy, remember the person on Twitter who tweeted out the design of the torchbearer armor?
Yes, yeah.
And it looks cool. It's in the show for like 15 seconds, maybe.
It's got to come back, right? That was my surprise is that I thought the torchbearer was going to be an important like ultimate warrior, but apparently anybody can just assume the mantle of him and it doesn't mean anything. And he offers the job of torchbearer to like the pussy Klingon who's like, I don't know about this. I don't know if I want to do it.
I was disappointed that he didn't fucking kill that guy.
He should have killed that guy, right?
He should have killed that guy.
Yeah. He definitely should have killed that guy.
I will say, before I forget, I was very concerned that they weren't going to do the Klingon death yell when they buried the guy, but I was very happy to see that they did.
They should have just had Worf and Riker in the background of one of the shots really quickly, just yelling at it. Yeah, they do their death yell. You have some Batliths. They fight with Klingon-y type weapons. But I was very surprised he didn't kill that guy, unless Takumva's philosophy is something outside of the normal Klingon stuff, although it doesn't seem to be the case that way. We should talk about Burnham, and we should talk about Sarek, because I think that's interesting. So the main character here is a child who... Correct me if you think any of this is incorrect. her parents were killed by a Klingons at some attack, mm-hmm. and she was yep. adopted by Vulcans. Sarek becomes her mentor, and yep. She's the first human to go to Vulcan schooling, basically. And after she grows up, she gets sent back into Starfleet for some reason. Sarek wants to do it, or she wants to do it. And she comes under the command of this Captain Georgiou, and that's 7 years before the events of this take place. So what we're dealing with is the first example of a human being sort of raised by Vulcans, and she has a human, you know, the human heart, human core, while she's also logical, or at least tries to pursue things logically. And it seems like a lot of her logic is actually worn off over the past 7 years.
Yeah, that was really interesting. It was like, it reminded me of when I went to college, and at first everyone made fun of my Boston accent.
Sure.
And then I found myself going out of my way to kind of get rid of it.
Yep.
And to the point where no one could notice it anymore when I graduated. And it's like, yeah, you know, you hang out with new people, and you know, certain things you grew up with, you don't do anymore. You know, culturally things change. So she just, you know, she's hanging out with more humans and getting a little bit less Vulcan-y, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
I did really like, and I only mean kind of really liked, when she shows up on the, what the hell's the ship called? The Sieg Heil.
Oh, what's the Shenzhou.
Shenzhou. I was close. When she shows up on the Shenzhou, damn it, the quote unquote Discovery, when she shows up on the ship as an adult,
yeah,
they show her and she's got this like really hip looking half Vulcan half human haircut.
Yes, yep.
Which I was like, oh my god, so, you know that they were like, see what the haircut? It's like an inversion of the Vulcan haircut where it's half Vulcan half human, which really shows how she's conflicted. And, you know, it shows both sides of her personality, you know, that kind of shit.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought it actually looked kind of cool, but as soon as I saw it, I was like, oh, geez, that's hitting the nail pretty hard.
I think that she's, I would assume that they have to flesh out this Vulcan thing, because I didn't get a good sense of it early on that was the case. I mean, the most you get out of it, and I actually considered it an homage to TOS, when she argues the computer to death, basically.
I loved that.
Yeah.
I really liked it because it was kind of in the same vein of the, you know, things change when you go to college kind of thing. It's like she still has that in the back pocket when she needs it.
Right.
Like she can still speak Portuguese to her mother when she has to.
Right. Yeah. And it's an homage to Kirk ended a lot of TOS episodes by arguing the computer to death, basically, too.
Oh, so, really? Yeah. Oh, because I really liked the idea that she's been trained in the art of absolute logic, so yep. she outlogics the computer. I thought that was great.
Yeah, I mean, it makes more sense character-wise in her story than it does in Kirk. Yeah. Kirk's is just because Kirk is like a Superman, basically, who can do anything he wants, but she's a little bit different. So, what was your sense of her as a Vulcan? Did you think that it came across strong? Did you think that her stuff with Sarek, and what did you think about Sarek in general, I guess?
I actually thought that the having her show up on the ship and be very Vulcan-y, I don't know. I felt like that was a bit of a misstep because she does feel so different later. And again, 7 years is a long time. You change and all that kind of stuff.
But yeah.
I don't know. I liked it. I was much more interested in her in the present version of her.
Yeah, yeah.
I
thought she was too Vulcan-y, sort of. Like, I would have appreciated... Like, I think I'd have a... I have a harder time buying this. I would not think that the humans are good at being Vulcans. In a lot of ways.
Oh, no, they should be terrible.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. That's the entire point.
Yeah, right. And the fact that you have the schism where she's learning as a little kid, right? And she can't do it because the things that the computer are asking her about are emotionally tied to her. It's like her parents are dying, so she doesn't want to talk about it. And so you see her not being good at it, and Sarek kind of chastises her, but then it just cuts to her being a pretty good Vulcan who... I guess the intent of that scene is that Georgiou is getting under her skin in a little bit of a way, like she's opening up that humanity aspect of her to getting on the ship and talking to her like that. Mm-hmm. But I thought that I don't know how far they can take it a lot. Like, I don't know what the continuing conflict would be about the logic aspect, because she's not really conflicted about it. She seems to have a pretty good balance going forward about when she wants to use humanity, when she wants to use this sort of logical outcome. But I thought that Sarek was good. I thought that he was kind of my big concern going into it, because I love the character. I think you like the character from the originals and the movies and everything.
Mm.
And I was concerned that the actor would not be able to get him down well enough. And I think that he does a good job of playing Vulcans, and he actually does a good job of playing a younger Sarek at this point.
Is that not the same guy who plays Sarek in the new movies?
Is it? It might be. James.
I didn't look, but I guess I just assumed that it was.
I can look it up while you. What do you think of Sarek and his portrayal, James Frayn's portrayal?
I thought he was pretty good. I didn't love the first scene where he was talking to her as a little kid. I don't know. It just seemed a little bit too on the nose, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
The stuff with her talking to his hologram was better. You know, because he's interesting, because the purpose he's kind of always served is sort of, he's just there so people can kind of have a conversation with him.
Yeah, right.
And I thought he filled that role fairly well. And I liked the idea that it's sort of the inverse of the Sarek and Spock relationship, where instead of giving Spock shit for being too much like a human, he's kind of telling her to recognize that she has to deal with the fact that she's a human.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Which I thought that stuff was interesting. And I hope they don't go back to that well too much. Because I think Sarek is best used
sparingly,
in bits and pieces. Yeah. Because anytime he shows up, it's always supposed to feel like a big deal.
Yeah. Yep.
So it would be too bad if they kind of use him up and have it be like, you know, like what was that show, Boston Legal, where at the end of every episode, Shatner and Spader would just have like a thematic talk on a balcony. I hope they don't do that, where it's like, oh, I guess I'll go back to my room and talk to my dad.
Yeah. I think that he's, I hope they don't overuse him, because he is effective in that way. The thing that always got me about the Sarek performance is that Sarek is supposed to be like this sort of ultimate Vulcan, right? Like, he's highly respected. Everyone clearly loves him. He's a, you know, a faithful ambassador or whatever, and he's highly logical. A lot of the story arcs involve him sort of like the TNG stuff is about him losing control and how tragic that is for him. The thing that always got me about the Leonard performance is he did such a good job of balancing that aspect of his character while also not denying the fact that he has emotions. Like, he kind of lets it through every once in a while. Like, he'll give like a knowing sort of smirk or nod to Spock. I think that he does that well here. I think that the actor does a good job of portraying what he's got inside going on emotionally, and the writing does it too, because they have that whole scene where he's sort of in her soul and I assume that's the way that they'll bring him back in future episodes.
Yeah, that was kind of weird. I don't know how I feel about that.
Yeah, it's an easy out, right? For like, it's like, oh, how do you get Sarek back? It's like, oh, well, he's in her chakra or whatever, so he'll be back.
Yeah, I you know, at least they set the precedent that he can't do it all the time.
Yes,
and then it kills him. Physically taxing.
Yeah, right.
We
still have to figure out how we get around the fact that Spock does not know her, right?
Yeah. How old? I mean, Spock's going to be pretty young, if not born yet, right?
No. At the point of the Discovery, Spock should be on the Enterprise with Pike.
Really?
This is only 10 years before Kirk.
Oh, no shit.
Yeah.
Oh, well, I guess that makes the technology a little bit more weird.
So Kirk is out there. Spock are out there. Do you think we'll see them?
God willing, no.
Right. I don't want to see them whatsoever. I hope to God that they are not involved in this show.
That is just going to make things... Well, let's put it this way. If the show is tanking... Probably yes.
Sure.
But no, that would just be too. Because so if we is should we get into the visual?
Yeah, go ahead.
So, I think doing anything like that, you're just drawing attention to the fact that it's not 1967 anymore.
Right. Yeah.
And I personally don't mind the updated stuff. I was a little bit surprised by the hologram thing, because I don't think they've ever really done that, except for after Tasha Yar died, they had that little handheld thing.
Sure.
But that's more of a Star Wars thing than it is a Star Trek thing to have active holograms, like full body holograms that walk around.
Yeah, walk around and interact with people.
Also,
yeah.
My favorite thing was, I don't know, they do this all the time, but in the scene where the hologram Sarek is talking to Burnham, hologram Sarek walks across the room and sits on a table. So there just happened to be a table in his part of the hologram, in his room that he's doing the hologram thing in the same place. They do that shit all the time.
And you can tell that it's an older series, right? Because the hologram glitches all the time. Like there's a little it fritzes out and stuff like that. So it's an older series. Yeah, he sits down on the table. So hopefully he has an exact layout of her quarters in his apartment that he can go to.
But uniform wise, I like the uniforms. I don't think when I saw them initially, I realized how they work the colors in quite as much, because I thought it was just like the piping on the shoulders, but it's actually like the whole flanking of it is of the torso is colored too, which is cool.
Yep. And I think that you could convince me that this uniform blends into the TOS uniform. It's not that distinct from it, it's not totally unrealistic for me to assume that you could move from this uniform into just a you'd update the TOS version and you wouldn't say that it's 1967, but the form is similar and it makes sense to me.
Yeah. And I think as far as that stuff goes too, when you have something like Star Wars, where when you're going to do a prequel thing, the story you're telling is so like the world itself is part of the effect of the story that's being told. Like the reason that's one of the reasons that Star Wars, that everything is so shitty, is because the Empire is shitty.
Yeah,
so
And so
when you go back in time, you feel like that the things should kind of line up a little bit better. Cause then you just keep asking yourself, well, all of this new shit that they've added, why don't they have any of this stuff in the new, but that's like one linear story that's being told. Whereas in something like this, I don't think it matters that much, because it's sort of like it's in the same universe, but you have to kind of deal with the fact that it's 50 years later
right.
that the show's being made.
Yep.
It's not like 20, 15 years later in the case of Star Wars. Stuff is going to change. Design's going to change. You can't get away with setting a 1967 Star Trek era show with the same costume and same design as you had in 1967. You just can't do it.
Yep.
So that stuff doesn't bother me as much here. I like that I feel like they kept it where it counted. Like the phasers look the same.
Yep.
The ships are by and large clearly similarly designed. I mean,
the Klingon ships look totally different, which is interesting.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering too, is because I was expecting, when all of the other Klingons showed up, I was expecting to see a couple ships that looked a little bit closer to what we're familiar with. Because still I was thinking like, oh, well, this is some sort of different sect of Klingons or something that have different ships, which, believe that.
Yep.
But yeah, to see them so drastically changed is interesting. I did think
I got a glimpse of a couple that kind of look like the big battle cruisers in Next Generation, where they have the sort of middle long body with two nacelles that stick out the side and sort of run the length of it. Like they look like a primitive version of that. I don't know if I'm just digging into it too deeply.
Are you talking about Klingon ship?
Yeah, the Klingon ships. In Next Generation, not the Birds of Prey, but like the big one that's like a triangle with the two nacelles that stick off the sides of it.
Oh, the gray one, like the one that they used in the original series. I remember the original series one and the green one. I don't really remember another.
You're probably thinking of the green one. Yeah. So, and not the little Birds of Prey that like fly around, the smaller ones that is in like Voyage Home and stuff like that. The bigger one of the Klingons. I thought one looked slightly similar to that or something, but I might be paying too much attention to it, I suppose.
Yeah.
I mean, I think...
But yeah.
Well, the...
Well, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, the design aspect doesn't bother me at all. I like the sort of, you know, the visuals of it and the bright light. I think that makes a lot more sense. It feels very Sunshine. Everything like that reminds me of Sunshine the movie in a lot of ways. And that's always,
you know what? That's what it is. That's what I'm thinking of.
Yeah.
Sunshine.
That
movie's great. We should do that on the Patreon podcast. It's a good movie.
We should. And I think that, you know, it's a nice sort of primitive thing. Like, this is an older show and they can't block out the light when the thing gets too bright. Like, there's no way for them to do it and stuff like that. And I think that all the tech looks good. We didn't see a tricorder, I don't think. You see a tricorder in the opening credits and it looks like the old tricorder.
Oh, speaking of, how did you feel about the theme in the opening credits?
I thought it was really good. It reminds me of Mad Men in a lot of ways for some reason. I thought that the best part of it was there's a couple shots of the tiny little Discovery ship flying, and it's flying past like weird alien stuff, and it's very small and just flying through it. It looks very 60s to me. It reminded me of a lot of like some kind of 60s inspired art.
Yeah, I think whoever's running the school for people who design opening credit sequences these days,
they're doing gangbusters.
Yeah, everybody, like, I feel like every show has, at the very least, a great opening credit sequence.
Yep.
And so if you have a bad one, it really stands out. And I thought this was good. I liked those long shots of the Discovery flying through. That was cool. And I liked the schematics look.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Deconstruction thing they were doing with the technology was cool. Because, you know, it puts you in the mindset of the show. It's because you see the phasers and the communicators and the ship and stuff.
And opposed to Enterprise, which was like, you know, we're going to try something different, so we'll put a terrible song in it. This, you know, it's these little things of like, this doesn't sound like a straight up Star Trek theme. But it's definitely in the mode of being a Star Trek theme. Like this is how you, if you're making a spin-off series of something, there's a couple things that I feel like you have to take advantage of these small little things that are instantly iconic with the series. And it's not like the theme song interferes with stuff. So why would you make a pop song be your theme song? Just give it a Star Trek theme song, right? Like that's what you have to do. And I thought that this show did a really good job, and it also ends with the traditional sort of variant of the original theme song ending, which is
It was nice. They didn't try to copy anything really that had come before, but it still remained in that. You know what it kind of reminded me of a little bit is every time they do a new James Bond movie, they do a new James Bond song, and the best ones don't ape the melody of the James Bond song, but they kind of exist thematically and like aesthetically in the same world.
Yeah, right.
You know, there's you know, the sort of like that minor key kind of like stepping sort of thing makes you feel like it's a James Bond song.
Right. Yeah.
And I feel like this did the same thing where it felt like a Star Trek song, but it wasn't trying to ape anything else that had come before it. I thought it worked really well. Another problem, this is just a Rogue One thing, but Rogue One, I thought, really completely dropped the ball music-wise.
Oh, did they?
That's not for this podcast.
Yeah, we'll have to do that with the Star Wars podcast.
But yeah, I'm really happy that the theme song wasn't like, you and me flying on the Discovery.
Me and Jason Isaacs, he's the captain. I thought it was really good. It was quality. It's a good intro. It's got... you know, potential to be like posters and stuff like that. Like it has a nice sort of art aspect to it as well.
Feeling bad, which is hard because Sarek's my dad.
I didn't really have anything else to talk about. I thought that, you know, I think that it's always tough for us to talk about the opening two episodes of this, right? Knowing is that we don't know where this is going to go. And like we can really just sort of give our impressions of the characters and like how we thought things went along. So in terms of that, I was pretty happy with the show. I didn't have any problems. What'd you think?
I had one thing that I wanted to talk about.
Oh, sure.
Which was the high point of both episodes for me. It was just a throwaway line, which I loved, which is when she's in the brig and the guy kind of comes stumbling in with the scar and the burn wound on his face.
Yeah, and the concussion.
And he says, Yeah, and he says, "Why are we fighting? We're Starfleet. We're explorers."
Yeah.
And I was like, "Yeah, hell yeah." Nobody ever says that. And I thought it was a really good point that has never ever been brought up. Like the show is called Discovery. The entire concept of, you know, it kind of works on a few different levels because they're discovering the Klingons and the Klingons, you know,
and it's an inner discovery and stuff. You know,
exactly. But yeah, the whole concept of the thing is that they're explorers, but they always seem to be shooting at people for some reason. So it was nice to have someone kind of voice that concern and have it be someone who's just been the victim of this thing. It's like, what? Why are we we should not be fighting these people. This is not what we're here to do.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I think the show has a lot of potential in it, and it comes down to stuff like they're taking a modern take on the, you know, the Vulcan hello. To me, makes perfect thematic sense in this universe.
I'm gonna be using that for the weirdest shit.
It sounds really,
like, oh,
sounds,
you know,
really
it was
sexual.
Working well until they gave him the old Vulcan hello, and then his pants fell off.
Yeah, it sounds either like a you murdered somebody, or it's a horrible sexual maneuver. But it's the point of the Vulcan hello makes total sense to me. Where, you know, Starfleet is, I feel like old Starfleet and the old shows are represented by Giorgio, who dies in this episode, right? These episodes, like that is a important decision. She is the character who says Starfleet doesn't fire first and stuff like that. And
yeah,
Burnham gives you an argument along with Sarek as to why it might make sense to do this based on who you're dealing with. And it's not, you can't just have this golden rule of this is how Starfleet acts. Everything, Sarek has the great point about, like, well, this worked for the Vulcans. I can't guarantee it'll work for the humans because it's a totally different situation for you. Mm. And I think that this series should do more of an explanation of those, an examination of those kind of story ideas, which the older series were hesitant to do because they wanted to cling to that Star Trek thing, that ethos.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, what they do is, you know, my favorite thing. It's like they, unlike the other shows, which is probably to a fault, at least when they start, always end up leaning on the structure of the, that's the word I'm looking for, ensemble cast.
Oh, sure.
To the point where nobody really gets any time to kind of shine or anything for like a season and a half,
right,
for some reason.
Yeah, yeah.
Here, right off the bat, they give you a character, and they give you a character who is participating in the action of the story, who is making decisions, and then having to deal with the consequences of the decisions that she's making.
Yep, yep.
And it's like, if you can do that, you can tell a good story. And because that stuff is where you get where the interesting things come from. You know, I mean, you could argue that, well, I don't know how different it would really have been if she didn't get sent to the brig. But the fact that in the first episode of this Star Trek show, she fucking Vulcan neck benches her captain and then gets sent to the decommissioned and sent to the brig for mutiny.
Yep.
That was awesome. Yep. They've never done that in a Star Trek show before. It's great.
No, it's I think that's a good way to end it out.
And
too.
I should say they do that, and then it's not like the next episode it's like, yeah, that was weird how we don't ever mention the fact that you were kicked off the ship for mutiny,
right,
last episode, isn't it? It's like the consequences of her decision reverberate through the whole season, which is I love that stuff. So I'm really looking forward to see where they go with it.
Yeah, I think that's a good place. I'm going to play an audio clip. Me and Clay are going to come back and we'll sort of wrap this thing up. So we'll see you in a second.
The accused cannot be heard.
Guilty on all counts.
Is there anything you would like to say in your defense before a sentence is rendered?
From my youth on Vulcan, I was raised to believe that service was my purpose. And I carried that conviction to Starfleet. I dreamed of a day when I would command my own vessel and further the noble objectives of this great institution. That dream is over. The only ship I know in ruins. My crew. Gone. My captain. I wanted to protect them from war. From the enemy. And now we are at war. And I am the enemy.
All right, Clay, so I don't think the rating system is going to work on this show yet because we're not really familiar with the mm-hmm. series at this point. I was pretty happy with these episodes, though, and I think that it'll be interesting going forward. I think that they have a lot of potential that they can work with, and I didn't really have, you know, it's hard to say what's a flaw of the show at this point and what's just kind of like getting through your first episode of a new TV production type stuff that'll just fade away. So I don't really have any, I need to see more episodes, I guess, would be my final thoughts.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, I would say I would rather watch these two episodes again than any of the episodes of Deep Space Nine I've watched up to this point. But you know, I was thinking about the Orville, which I did finally watch. I watched the first episode, and I did not care for it.
Sure.
And I guess it's probably unfair to compare them, but the Orville arguably feels more like old Star Trek in that they don't really give you a lot.
Yeah.
It's like just sort of there.
Yep.
Whereas this one is actually, you know, taking some chances and doing some interesting stuff and trying to put some new spin on some stuff.
I mean, what I think is funny is that, you know, the diehard Star Trek fans who just bitched about the new show coming out, I was like, you guys are going to get stuck with the Orville, right? Like, you have to support the Orville. And it's like, is that really where you want to go with the show? Do you just want that sort of like a pseudo homage to an old show from 30 years ago? Is that really what you want? Or do you want something sort of new and in the vein? And I think that they did a good job of, they kept this show Star Trek-y. It feels like a Star Trek show.
Yeah. I think the hard part is keeping it up.
Yeah,
like if they can continue to make these interesting stories involving these interesting characters and dealing with actual consequences to actions and stuff, then yeah, I think there's a ton of potential here. But if it's like, you know, they blew all their money on their hook at the beginning and then the rest of it's just going to be like a normal Star Trek show, then, you know, I think we're going to be disappointed.
Yeah, we'll see. Yeah. I'd be a little bit disappointed if we don't get a few episodes that deal with, you know, they've got to do some away mission and stuff, right? Like we can't exist in this complete character turmoil, or is that what something that you would want of the exploring just Burnham and her sort of relationship?
No, I don't think that's necessary. I mean, I think it's just what's interesting about that stuff is that it becomes a part of the character that informs the decisions that the character makes. You know? So you can do whatever you want, but as long as you don't forget where you're coming from, or where they're coming from, I think is going to be important.
Yeah.
But so yeah, I mean, you can do away missions and stuff like that. Fine, totally fine. I mean, I'm sure they will. I'm sure that's going
to
be.
I think they have to. Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I'm at this point. I'm. I hate to say this, but I'm more excited about this show than I am about watching more Deep Space Nine. Right. Which I mean, honestly, I think it's because this is new. This is interesting. They put a spin on it that I wasn't expecting. So it's interested me more.
Yeah.
Whereas Deep Space Nine for me so far has just been kind of like more of the same stuff that I've already seen.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. 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 Well, we'll see how this continues going forward, I guess. But we'll call it a day there. Thank you guys for listening. If you want to support the show or follow the show, you can go to all the social media stuff, which is linked below. If this is the first show that you've listened to because you're looking for Discovery content, welcome. Hopefully you stick around. We'll see. We'll be doing this Discovery episodes every Monday going forward, and then we'll have our Deep Space Nine continuing on Thursdays until Discovery ends, runs its course, and then we'll go back to 2 days a week of Deep Space Nine. But, yeah.
You know what?
Go ahead.
You know what they got to do if they're really hurting and they want the money? Forget Kirk and Spock. They gotta get caught in a time warp bubble and end up in like the future imperfect version of yesterday's Enterprise. Seriously, 100%. If you give me like apocalyptic vision of Kirk, I mean of Picard and like Riker,
yep,
as old men, they're gonna make $1 billion. Just a little bit. Just a little bit. Even if it was like a flash forward and they don't even say anything.
Just a taste.
Yeah.
Guys, check out the social media links. The only thing I'll push is the Patreon. If you go to patreon.com/thepenskyfile, you support the show for a couple dollars. You get extra podcasts. You get stuff we talk about movies, things like that. You can also provide a little bit of feedback on the upcoming episodes of Star Trek. It was tough to do that with the Patreon for this week because no one has seen the episode and we need to get the thing out. So there's no Patreon or patron feedback on this episode. But guys, thank you very much for supporting the show. And as always, I get to list off the people who are our highest tier supporters. It's Stephen Cobb, Magpie's Nest Productions, Ben Douglas, Tax Owlbear, Kyle Barrett, Joint Mango, Vincent Adultman, Doug Valkamp, and Tarek Latif. Thank you guys very much for supporting the show. Clay, we're done with the first two episodes of Star Trek Discovery, and next week we only have one, so it's only half the amount of work, which will be nice.
Boo.
Boo.
Why can't they just give them all to us like everybody else does on the planet?
Do you think it's this show is having a break, mid-season break, for a couple months. So we'll get like seven episodes and then seven on the backside.
I hate the mid-season break.
Yeah.
Does the seasons even exist anymore? I feel like they don't.
They don't.
It feels like everything has turned into, it's not a season break, it's a mid-season break. Which is ends up being the same amount of time off as like a regular season break ends up being.
Yes.
So it's like, why don't you just call it what it is?
just take your break normal and the normal time. I'd agree. It's especially weird just because it's not like it's a couple weeks or anything. It's like a couple months that you take off. It doesn't feel necessary to me.
I mean, obviously, as these shows get more intense, production-wise, you know, you got to take more. Like, they're taking a whole year off before they do any more Game of Thrones,
yep.
Just because every episode of that is like a fucking 2-hour movie.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
So you know, I don't fault them for doing it. It's just, you know, I don't know. My gripe might be unfounded here because I understand that they probably need to take a break.
Yep. All right, guys. Well, we'll be back with the next episode, which is Context is for Kings, I believe that's the title of the episode. Does that strike you as familiar in any way, Clay?
Should it?
Yeah, there was a TOS episode called Conscience of the King.
Oh, is this going to have Burnham being involved in like
a Shakespearean play?
Yeah, a production of like Henry V on the Discovery or something.
It's everything that we've wanted from a Star Trek show going forward. Well, that's it, guys. Thank you very much for listening to the show. Clay, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm looking forward to this.
Yeah, you'll be here for the rest of Discovery. That's the news. Normally, the show has a rotating cast of guests, but Clay has agreed to do the entire Discovery just to keep things consistent because I don't know if you could tell, Clay, but this seems to be the most serialized of the Star Trek shows so far going forward.
I have noticed that.
It's interesting.
Or have I?
Or have you? Well, anyway.
Cliffhanger.
Guys, thank you very much for listening. I'll see you next time.